In this episode of Startups to the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be doing a teardown of the Blue Tick marketing plan. This is Startups to the Rest of Us, episode 384. Welcome to Startups to the Rest of Us. The podcast helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it, I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. How you doing this week, Rob?
I'm doing all right. I was just looking through our 584 worldwide iTunes reviews. We're approaching 600 people, so just 16 more, and we'll be crossing that 600 mark, which is quite a milestone. Some recent reviews. There's one here from just last week from Koklov, and he says, great podcast, been listening for years. One from Mr. Manman from the UK. He says, full of great practical advice. Discovered the show recently and now a regular listener. Extremely valuable advice for anyone who wants to build tech products. And Lyman's from the US says, every episode is invaluable. Somehow Mike and Rob ensure that every episode has at least one and usually a ton of valuable info. I love the presentation style and how much they pack in. I don't think anyone should start a tech business without listening to this podcast. So thank you very much for those. And you can log into iTunes or Stitcher or Downcast, Overcast, and leave a five-star review without even typing in all those crazy technical words and phrases and sentences. Just hit the five-star button and it will go a long way towards helping us stay motivated to record the podcast. Also helps us grow our audience, which convinces us to keep doing this every week, to ship every Tuesday, as they say. How about you? What have you been up to? Aside from, so you lost power. People know I did a solo episode last week. Yeah, how was that with no power and no water?
Oh, that sucked. It was about, about a day or so that we lost power. So we lost it, I think, at around 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night. And then we didn't get power back until probably like 6, I think, probably 6 or 7 the next day. So, yeah, it sucks. But I mean, the real hard part is that, you know, with no running water either, because we have a well and the water comes up through the well with the electricity that powers a pump. So we actually have some giant jugs of water that we keep downstairs just in case we do lose power or something happens with our water, because we've had issues with our pump before as well. So you lose your pump and, you know, you can't have any running water, which is surprisingly, like, you use it a lot, but you never ever think about it. If like, oh, well, what would happen if I didn't have water today, or what would happen if I don't have electricity today? It's just inconvenient, to say the least.
Right. Right. Well, glad you're back. And you went to Germany recently.
Yep. Went to FemtoConf, which was pretty awesome. I had a great time. There were probably about 40 to 50 people there. And there were some issues with a few people getting into FemtoConf just because they were flying in from the eastern U.S. And of course, the snowstorm came through and hit like the New England area. So some people were delayed. Some people just didn't get there at all. And so the travel for a few people was kind of a mess. Fortunately, I flew out on Thursday and got there and, you know, kind of recovered and no real major issues with jet lag, but I really liked the feel of it. It was a lot like MicroConf when it was much, much smaller and just like much smaller groups, intimate conversations, very much like MicroConf. The feel of it and the vibe was very reminiscent of that. Like I'd say in the very, very early days of MicroConf, 2011, 2012, when you didn't necessarily know everybody or you were just kind of getting introduced to what other people's businesses were. So there were a couple of talks on the first day, and then the next day, Sherry gave a small workshop. Then we split off into a couple other ones where Alex Yumishev from Jitbit did one on kind of like growth hacking, engineering growth hacking that you could do. And then Moitza Mars gave one on Facebook ads, which I went to that one. And she went through and gave basically set everybody up with their Facebook ads account, walked them through exactly how to get things started and kind of helped them figure out what it was that they needed to do moving forward.
That sounds super cool. So were there were just like one or two talks a day?
On Saturday, there was 4 talks, and then on Sunday, there was Sherry's workshop in the morning, and then there were 2 other workshops after that. Thomas Smail from FE International was supposed to be there, so there were supposed to be 2 workshops and followed by another 2 workshops, you know, kind of run simultaneously in different rooms, but because Thomas couldn't make it, Sherry ended up doing 1 for everybody, and then the other 2 were split. So the first speaker on Saturday was Claire Suellentrop, who's also going to be speaking at MicroConf in a couple of months. Actually, what's that, 6 weeks away? Mm-hmm. Right now. Oh, geez. So Claire spoke first, and then it was followed by Aleth, she spoke about GDPR, and then I spoke about email follow-ups. And then Patrick Campbell, he was one of the people who was delayed. He spoke about modifying your pricing and how to figure out what an ideal pricing model should be for your business and using it as one of the biggest growth levers in your business. And I think I got a lot out of that talk because I'm kind of right in the middle of evaluating pricing and figuring out what to do with it and how to pitch it to people. But he also pointed out the fact that SaaS has gotten substantially more competitive over the past several years. And he had graphs and charts that showed like the number of competitors that people started 5 years ago had versus people who started 2 years ago versus people that started last year. It was just fascinating the amount of data that he had on that based on all the stuff that they do over Price Intelligently.
Yep. His talks are always super valuable and have a lot of data. Sounds like a lot of fun, man. Sherry was there, obviously, and told me about it and said she enjoyed it as well. And you know, said there was a ton of overlap with the MicroConf crowd. I think she said like most people go to one of the MicroConfs, which is fun. It's fun to get together in a more like almost a more mastermindy arrangement. I know it's not that small, but I bet that you kind of know everybody and know what they're up to, and you can really literally talk to everyone at the conference.
Yeah, and if you don't know them before you get there, then it's easy to at least have those conversations and get to know them by the end of it.
For sure. Cool. So what are we talking about today?
Well, I had asked a few people what they wanted to hear on the podcast. And one of the biggest things that kind of came out of it was what is going to be the initial marketing plan for Bluetick now that the new website is up and running. So I wanted to talk about that and just kind of go back and forth and give, a high level indication of what I'm going to be doing. And then you and I can talk about either specifics of it or bat some ideas around, or, you know, even just tear some of these things apart and say, look, don't do this, because more than happy to hear some of the advice that you have to share.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I know that I had shared with you at one point the drip marketing game plan and the Hittail one, actually. And the Hittail's a little bit out of date, but did you look through that at all to populate this list you have?
So some of those things are pulled from there. I haven't gone back to either of those in a while. I probably should do that at this point. Like most of what I've been doing lately has been really focused on either MicroConf or on getting the new website up and running. And kind of now that that's in place and things are kind of settling down a little bit with MicroConf, I can go back and take a look at those. But some of these things are pulled from that.
No, that makes sense. One thing I would consider before we dive in, you have it broken down into two categories, kind of the I'm going to do these things now and then my longer term things, right? Maybe you do them over as you get time or as you get budget. Something I would think about is to even have one before now, or to split the now into two buckets, is to have one-time things and ongoing things. And so we, like one of your bullets here is product listing sites, like Product Hunt, Beta List. And I would even go so far as to say all the CSS galleries, we already have Beta List, but there's a whole, there's like 50 different things. There's getapp.com, there's Capterra, there's AppStorm, there's this whole list, right, that you can put together. And those are truly going to be one-time things. And I think it might help your mental model of like, okay, going to do those once, going to get the hit of traffic. And even a podcast tour is kind of a one-time thing, right? You're not going to do that for a year, whereas webinars, joint webinars, and that kind of stuff, I think it is more ongoing. So does it help for you to think about it like that?
Yeah. So in Teamwork, I have a project that's specifically called Bluetick Marketing that just has like lists and lists of things in there. I'm looking at it now. There's probably, 20 different lists in here, and there's about 162 different to-do items in there. And one of them is specifically one-time marketing tasks. So things like going into the Chrome Web Store and looking to see if there's anything that can be leveraged there, submitting it to the Google Apps Marketplace, the product listing sites, and setting up various accounts at different places and documenting certain processes, et cetera. So mostly just one-time things that I need to do it once, or it's a task that needs to be done, but could then be the output of that could then be leveraged over and over again.
Okay, that makes sense. So what I've done is updated the list a little bit, and I just kind of threw some things at the top called one time, and then we have a ongoing, and then a later list. Does that work for you?
Yep.
Cool. So let's dive in.
So you want to go straight into the now sort of things?
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about the one-time things, because I think that, these are things that I had in both, kind of all my marketing plans, right? But specifically, I'm going to keep talking about Hittail and Drip, because that's when I kind of formalized this and put it into a doc. And I really thought through where are the places that I can get a bump now that I've launched. It's like the website's live, try to get written up. Every time I tried to get written up on VentureBeat and TechCrunch and ReadWriteWeb and GigaOM when it existed, all these things. never worked, but at least I tried it, right? I was trying to get some type of buzz. And then there are the ones that are easier or guaranteed. It's like startupli.st and beta list and makeuseof.com and, you know, all the things we just talked about, like Product Hunt and that kind of stuff. You know, you're almost guaranteed to get a listing, even though it might take a while to do. So I think everyone, and you know, you, I think if you were venture backed, maybe those little, oh, and CSS galleries is the other one. If your site look, you know, is good enough and is a custom design, and I realize yours is probably more templatized, but always got a lot of traffic, both Hittail and Drip, from the CSS galleries. Now, did it convert, you know, amazingly well? No, but did it convert to some trials for almost zero effort? Because in essence, I would have a VA, or I think I maybe even hired a service at one point, because there are like 100 different CSS galleries. And I think there was someone who'd kind of productized it, and I paid like $99 and submitted some info, and they submitted to all of them. To me, that's a great, you know, zero time, $99 investment, because if you get one or two trials, you know, depending on your price point, that pays it off. So that's how I always entered it. I think if you were venture backed and need to make $1 billion, then maybe these kind of little initial approaches could be a waste of focus or a waste of time. But I think given that every trial counts for you, I think those things are important to do. Chrome Web Store is the other one you said, and the Google Apps Marketplace. I had zero luck with the Chrome Web Store. And Google, what's the difference between Chrome Web Store and the Google Apps Marketplace?
I'll be honest, like, I don't know. I'd have to go take a look at that. I think the Chrome Web Store was specifically for Google, for Chrome plugins. Like, at one point I had on my list of things to put into Bluetick, like a small Chrome extension. And obviously, like, that, it never materialized. It's not that it's not on the roadmap. It's just I didn't get there. So I don't know if that's even viable or something that I could do, because they may just say no. Like, you have to have an actual Chrome extension to be able to put that in here.
Yeah, that's what it is. While you were talking, I went to the Google Apps Marketplace. It's now called the G Suite Marketplace. And it's if you integrate into the, essentially into G Suite, right? And it also looks like you can just integrate with Gmail as well. And since you do that, and neither Drip nor Hittail did, I never submitted to the Google Apps Marketplace. So that would be kind of, that would be an interesting distribution channel. On the Chrome Web Store, I did get at a minimum Drip and maybe Hittail in, and it had zero traction for us. But I'm not saying it's not worth the time, but it didn't do anything. It's pretty crowded in there now. It's kind of like the iOS App Store, I think about. In the early days, it was a lot easier to get found. I know that Pipedrive said that a lot of their early growth came from the Chrome Web Store, but that was a different time. You know, it was 5 years ago or whatever. So it's one of those things where you have to create some images and you have to create some XML and you have to submit it. And it will take you probably half a day to do. And you got to weigh if you want to do that or not. It depends on what else you have going on. I would probably lean towards doing it just because it is, you know, one more distribution channel and you could get lucky. But I think you'll want to, it's like not as high priority as, you know, pitching podcasts as an example, because that's going to have a really high success rate for you.
Right. Yeah. The other thing that comes to mind is the going through the process of putting it out on all those product listing sites, like it contributes to long tail SEO as well. So like you get it contributes to your page authority and Google will see all those links coming in, and just building those backlinks is kind of important.
Yep. No, I would agree with that.
And then you said CSS galleries. So like fill me in on this, because this isn't something I had, it had even crossed my mind.
Yeah. And I'm trying to, the only reason that it even came on my radar is when I acquired Hittail, it wasn't Hittail, it was a different site. It was a productized service I had, and I forget, it was called CMS Themer at the time.
I remember that.
Yeah, and it had a really nice design, and it would get quite a bit of traffic from CSS galleries. And the interesting thing is CMS Themer was really targeting designers. And so that traffic converted very well. And so I've just always made it part of the marketing plan. Obviously, it doesn't convert nearly as well when it's an app like Hittail or Drip. But again, just posted a link into our doc. It's the CSSGalleryList.com. And for $60, they submit to, I don't even know, it looks like hundreds of galleries. And for $60 and almost no time, it's worth it for the backlinks. It's worth it even if the traffic doesn't convert, it's just another channel to get out there. So last time I did this was like 5 years ago. So there may be a better, you know, a better resource than the CSSGalleryList.com, but I do know that I used these guys and it saved me a lot of time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So this is not something that's going to grow your business overnight or be some huge game changing thing, but it's just all these little things, all these little parts of the snowball that you're kind of trying to pack on and seeing which ones get you any kind of traction.
Right. I think the important thing to keep in mind when going through this stuff is that like every little bit helps, and you don't always know that any one link is going to contribute anything. But if it gets one person over, and the ROI on that is going to be almost no way to calculate that, but you may get three people over and one person converts. It's not a 33% conversion rate for that, obviously, but you know, that can help.
That's right. And then have you considered how you could do like an Ask Me Anything on Reddit, or you could do a Show HN where you say, hey, here's this business and you know, it's doing what, you know, whatever the revenue is, or you can, I don't know if you can be vague about that or not, but, or, you know, how you want to handle it. And then basically say, I've grown it to this and give me your feedback or whatever. Have you thought about that? And I don't know if that's worthwhile or if that's just a big waste of time.
You know, I have. So I'm in a couple of Facebook groups, and that was suggested to me a couple of months ago by somebody that said, hey, you should do an Ask Me Anything on Reddit. And so I put it on my list, but it wasn't something that kind of rose, I'll say, close to the top of things that I thought were not necessarily game changers, but in terms of weighted priority, I didn't feel like it was something that would help out a lot.
It's tough. It's like you're not, if you were marketing directly towards developers, then it would make more sense, you know?
Right, right. I mean, if it was something like Ask Me Anything on growthhackers.com, for example, that'd be a totally different story. But that's something that I probably should add to the list, to be honest.
Oh, I think you should. Yep.
So anything else in terms of like one-time activities that come to mind that's not on this list?
I was just trying to think about that. Like on startups.com, answers.onstartups used to be kind of a place, but I don't even think that exists anymore. Quora is not, the bummer about Quora is it's not really a one-time thing. What I would do as a one-time thing is subscribe to some topics, right? There's probably like a cold email or even just email, you know, you want email sales. You want like the sales channels, not the email marketing channels, right? Because that's not really, email marketing tends to be bulk email and that's not what you're doing. So I would subscribe to categories or topics that fit your thing so that you're notified when questions are asked, because you want to be an early answer, right? You don't want to go and look at a bunch of old Quora threads and add your answers, because those threads already have a bunch of upvotes and you're not likely to get to be the answer that shows for everybody, because that's really what you want. So I did that in the early days of Drip. It's a bit time consuming, but what I found was the questions that come through tend to be so far into your wheelhouse that they're really easy to answer. Even if I typed a couple paragraphs, it just flowed out, right? I didn't have to research, because it was things like, what are, you know, approximate open rates and what's a good open rate for a list? And it's like, well, I actually know what the range is, you know? So here, I'll just talk it through. And it's going to be stuff that these questions for me would be tough to answer because I'm not knee deep in this warm email engagement the way you are. So anyways, I would consider as the one-time part of that, just subscribing and then kind of seeing how it, you know, seeing how it shakes out.
Yeah, that's interesting, being able to rattle off some of those numbers right off the top of your head. Because like as part of my talk that I did for FemtoConf, I looked specifically into that and looked across like 70,000 emails that have been sent out through Bluetick and looked to see what the open rates were and what the response rates were across those. And then I kind of cross-sectioned them and got like the average, the best case, worst case across everybody's accounts. And it was interesting what the numbers came out to be, and asking the audience, I said, hey, here's a number. What do you think this is in terms of the open rate? And, you know, it was about, I'd say, a third of the audience got it right, which means that 2/3 did not, which kind of indicates that these numbers are, I'll say, a little bit obscure or opaque and not everybody knows what they are.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think a couple of other things that come on to this list is, I don't know if they're one time or you would classify them as one time, but like a podcast tour, for example. I feel like it's something you can do it once, like when you start, and then if you're going to try and do it again, you have to have something compelling to follow up with, I'll say.
So I do think of a podcast tour as a one-time thing. But it's not as one time as, say, CSS gallery submissions, but it's going to move the needle more than them, right? So CSS gallery and the beta list and all the stuff. I just posted a link to whitetailsoftware.com, and Robert Graham had that pre-launch email list building directories. And we can include that in the show notes, but I think he had like 50 or 100 that he had his VA submit to, so that'll help as well. But all that to say, podcast tour is going to take several months because you're going to email and get scheduled. And then by the time it comes out, it'll be months down the line. I think the big thing, the advice that I would give when doing a podcast tour is it would be easy for you to just go on a bunch of kind of entrepreneur podcasts and say, look, I launched a product, right? And I'm building this SaaS product. And you'll convert some of those. It'll be a low conversion rate. the audience that's going to convert the best for you is going to be folks doing sales, right? It's going to be folks like both doing cold outreach and then doing the kind of warm nurturing that Blue Tick allows you to do. This stuff that comes right out of your inbox and looks very personable. So it's not bulk email like MailChimp or Drip, but it's the, you know, the one-on-one connecting, whether it's cold or warm. And, you know, who's doing that, right? This is BDRs and salespeople. And I know some of those are also founders, but I don't think that's going to be your market. You know, I think initially you can get kind of the SaaS founders and you can get our audience and the MicroConf audience and that crew. And so it's good to talk about it here. And, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't go on Mixergy and talk about it, but compared to the size of that audience, the conversion rate's going to be pretty small. The podcasts that I would target that I think are going to be your low-hanging fruit is to go on podcasts that are talking about sales and talking about sales like tech sales, right? Selling SaaS apps is probably, you know, the B2B sales approach. And you can come on not to tell the story of your product, but you can pitch it as, look, I'm an expert in this because I'm in it day to day and I'm seeing dozens or hundreds of customers who use our product and I'm seeing the patterns and I'm seeing the successes and how they're doing it well. And then I see the failures and the mistakes people are making. So I feel like, does that make sense? Like I would definitely go after that space rather than focus on, you know, the founder and entrepreneur space.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And that was actually my hesitation, I'll say, of doing that was because I didn't think that approaching the startup communities would be something that would really resonate. Like you said, like I'll get some sales out of it, but it's not going to be a high converting channel for me.
Yeah. And in all honesty, I would probably do both, but I would start with kind of the sales folks, you know, the sales podcast. And then you also have a list. I mean, you know, we both know at least a dozen people who have podcasts that I'm sure you could come on and talk about some aspect of your business. Try to vary it, right? Because we have this small community. And so if you go on, you know, all the podcasts of all our friends and talk about the same thing on every podcast, it's like everybody hears it. There's only so many people in it. So I would try to suggest different topics, different aspects. If you could talk about the launch on one, you could talk about the stress on another, you could talk about marketing approaches on another. I mean, I do think that is still worthwhile because it's easy for you to do, right? Because you're used to doing podcasts and it's 30 to 45 minutes of your time once it's booked. So it's not actually that much of a time investment to be in the earbuds of, you know, likely several thousand or tens of thousands of people. But as I said, you know, I do think I would start with trying to suss out, you know, what are kind of some B2B sales podcasts that I can get on.
You know, the interesting thing about that is there's two different ways that I could approach that particular problem of going out to the people who are running those podcasts. One of them is to send people directly into Blue Tick and let Blue Tick follow up with those people. And the other one is that there's a company and I stumbled across that will take kind of what your requirements are for appearing on podcasts and will go out through the different network of podcasts that they have contact with and essentially pitch you to them. I have mixed feelings on doing that, to be perfectly honest. But at the same time, like there's a time component that like it's going to suck up some of my time to do it myself. But in many ways, it comes across better if I do it myself.
Yeah, that's hard. There is a balance because, you know, we get a lot of pitches on this show and on Zen Founder. And if it's not the person pitching themselves, I tend to delete them. Like that's just the thing. You know, I do glance through them, but I don't think we've ever had anyone on the show who wasn't pitching themselves. One thing you could think about is, well, it's, you need like an, so when I had an executive assistant who was doing stuff, you know, back in the Drip days when I was still running the business, she could email people as me, like straight out of my inbox. And so you could develop the pitch and then, you know, have someone else send it as you, but it just depends on what you want to do. I don't know that I have a good answer for that.
But again, at that point, I could just put it through directly into Blue Tick and have Blue Tick send out the emails.
Ta-da! Yeah. That's cool.
It's interesting because occasionally when I'll email people, whether they contact me to ask me something about Blue Tick, occasionally they'll have heard the podcast and they'll ask in their email as to whether or not it was sent from me personally or whether Blue Tick sent it. And I'm just like, if you can't tell, doesn't that speak to what the product does?
Right. Does it matter? Yeah, that's funny.
Does it matter?
So we've talked a little at length here about the kind of one-time upfront things. You have a nice list of things that you plan to do on an ongoing basis. Why don't we look at a few of those?
Sure. So the things that kind of pop up high on my priority list, actually, you know what? Now that I'm looking through this, one of the other things that is on the ongoing list that should probably be moved over into one time is the public Zapier integration.
Oh, yeah.
because that's something that I've got a private integration right now, but I've not taken it public. And that's something that I've been asked about a couple of times by Zapier. And it's just, I just haven't done it yet, to be perfectly honest. Like there's a lot of edge cases that either are not handled well, or I know that there's other changes that need to be made. And I'd rather make those changes before I kind of open it up and have to fix a bunch of other stuff. Because there's some things that I do some like manual data manipulation just to make sure that things are working right for certain customers. And I need to put a more permanent solution in place for those. But that's something that after going through that process, I believe that they put it out through their mailing list. And I forget what their mailing list is, but it's something like 1 million people or something like that. Something ridiculously large. But the conversion rate is not going to be high, but it's more about driving awareness than it is about converting people at that point.
Yeah, you're just trying to get the word out so people have heard of you at this point. You know, one time thing I would do, it's not a marketing approach, but I would set up Google alerts for relevant terms that you want to monitor, like company names of competitors, kind of convert, try to hear about like articles I think that are relevant or conversations that are relevant. So you have to use your judgment there, but I do think getting something set up so that you're kind of participating or at least aware of what's going on in your space is helpful.
Yeah, I have a couple of them set up right now, but it's mainly for blue tick. And what I find is I'm getting a lot of emails about like dog conversations that are happening.
Yeah, I could see that.
So I guess if we're going to jump right into the ongoing stuff or the short-term things that I was looking at, the first one on my list was webinars.
Yep. And are you planning, because right below that you have JV webinars.
Right. So I kind of, I wouldn't say I lump them together, but you know, I think the general process is going to be similar for them. Whereas with a webinar, like there's joint webinars and then there's just like the regular webinars. The regular ones that are ones that I was probably going to promote to my own email list and then maybe do one like on a regular basis, or you know, promote it like on a Tuesday and then you know every other week or something like that. And then with the joint webinars, those would be much more scheduled, where I'm leveraging other people's audiences and contacting influencers and seeing if they are interested in having me come and talk specifically to their audience about how Blue Tick could solve a particular problem for them. And I see it almost like the podcast tour, but with a little bit more, I'll say, pinpoint accuracy or a little bit more focus specifically on those people. Because I don't want to go pitch somebody and say, hey, can I just do a joint webinar with you, but not actually have something that's going to be valuable to offer to their audience.
Right. I would do the joint webinars before I tried to do internal webinars, because it is just such a nice way to reach out beyond your own audience. Just for doing webinars to your own list, you're going to do one and then you're not going to fill anymore. You know what I mean? Until you get more people either using your product or on your email list. And we tried early on with Drip to just run Facebook ads, get people to opt into a webinar and try, we're going to try to run one every week. And we just couldn't get people to show up at a price that was worth it for us. Again, not saying it's not possible, but it's an entire funnel that you have to develop, and it's going to take you quite a bit of time and money to do. Whereas the JV webinars is low hanging fruit for you, because JV webinars are about who you know, and you do have a good network of people who I think you could contact and have access to their audience right away, basically for free, you know, without running all the ads and developing a funnel. It's just conversations. So I definitely prioritize the joint webinars above trying to do your own.
Now, how would you structure like any sort of special offers for those people going to like a joint webinar? Because I mean, there's lots of discussion. I've thought about this myself, is like, do I want to offer a discount? Do I want to give like different, like additional services or special templates that, hey, you can only get this here because you're coming to this particular person's webinar? My concern is really putting a lot of extra effort into something that, you know, at the end of the webinar, it may turn out to be nothing. Like I may not get very many signups out of it, or I may get a lot and I don't know. So it's hard to predict how much time and effort to make things custom for that person's audience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I would lean heavily towards some type of bonus, and it's time limited, right? You say, hey, if you sign up in the next 2 or 3 days, then you get this extra thing, whether it's a discount or the thing that you build. Discounts are the lazy way to do it. You know what I mean? It's like the zero time way, but it chews through your money. And so if you have no time, absolutely no time, then yeah, give people a discount. But discounts are not exciting. They're not as exciting as like, you know, get this complete email series. And even if it's only 3 or 4 emails, my guess is you could crank that out just using copy paste from what you're using already or from what you're recommending to people. and just edit it for their specific niche. So, you know, if you talk to a bunch of freelancers, then it's like, here's the way to follow up and do it for freelancers. And it's going to be a lot of it's going to be the same, you know, as any other sequence you have, but you're just going to tweak a few things. And I'm guessing in about a half an hour, you could probably crank something like that out and not even need to, you don't even need to do that in advance of the webinar, right? Because if you get no signups, then you just don't build it. But if you get signups using that coupon code, then you just manually reach out to people. Because it's not like you're going to get 500 signups, right? You're going to get 10 or 20 or 30. It's going to be a small amount. And you can just hit people up and distribute that to them. So I'm thinking of something like that. It's high value for someone signing up, but it's pretty low effort for you to create.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think right now when you go and sign up, and I was probably going to pull this off as things kind of progress, but when you go and sign up right now, there's kind of an offer there that basically says that I'll create an email sequence for you based on, you know, whatever scenario you describe, and that'll be your first sequence. So it's kind of like the concierge onboarding, but it's not, I'll say it's probably not very well described on the website right now, but it is something that I just offer to people as they come to sign up.
Yeah. So you have to figure out if you get 30 signups at a time, that's going to get tough. I think you're going to have to stop doing that, right? Because it's too time intensive, you know, so you have to back off that as you start getting more signups.
Right.
So what else? You have direct follow-ups with the following: invite to demos. You have current mailing list, prior prospects, which I think is good, and personal LinkedIn contacts.
Yep. So I have a couple of different spreadsheets that I've kind of put together based on when I was doing early validation. And then, you know, some people said, hey, now it's not a good time, or, you know, maybe later on when you're further along. And then there's people who have come in and I've done a demo with them and things just didn't work out for whatever reason, or they signed up and they either never followed through or they used it for a little bit. And then they said, yeah, this isn't working out for me. I've got this pool of people that I can go to that kind of fit into that criteria that I can put them into a blue tick sequence, for example, and invite them to come back and check it out or to go to a demo or something like that. But in addition to that, I also have the mailing list that is in the Drip account, which I've been kind of putting on the website, where there's an email course that you can go through. It's like a 5-day course, which I'm in the process of copy pasting all the content out of that to make it a slightly longer course. But those are people that I can go to directly. So I could take them out of Drip and then plug them into Bluetick and individually follow up with each of them. And I could do that based on like lead score, for example, and just like sort them by lead score and then add them in that order and say, like, these are the people that I'm going to approach first versus these other people who are probably, I'll say, less interested, but still on the list.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea to kind of approach. I was definitely going to say anybody who's canceled in the past, if the product is a lot better than when they tried it, like, you definitely want to contact them. Prospects who haven't converted, people who've been paywalled because they don't want to give credit card, like, now's the time when you're doing this to just circle back and kind of clean all that out. The personal LinkedIn contacts, you got to use your judgment there. You know, you don't want to come off as, so I've never done that, but if you know someone who really should get value out of it and you do a very soft pitch, you know, of like, hey, just to let you know, I just launched this, thought it might be helpful, you know, not anything that's like forceful, like jump on a call, then it's, I think it's, you know, halfway reasonable.
Yeah, I wasn't planning on doing that. What I was going to do was go through my LinkedIn contacts and just like look, obviously, like, I'm going to hand pick which ones I'm going to contact and which ones I'm not. I mean, if like I've got people who are, I know, are software developers or they're engineering managers or something like that, and they're really not a good fit for it. But that doesn't mean that I can't go to them and say, you know, hey, just wanted to check in with you, see how things are going, and let you know, I just recently launched this. If you know of anyone who could use this, I'd love an introduction just to kind of help me out. Because it's, you know, I'm leveraging my personal relationships at that point.
I could see doing that. Another thing, I had just added a couple things to the list. Actually, you had retargeting on there, mostly Facebook. I think that's, it says Facebook primarily. I think that's a really good idea to get set up. Whether you use Perfect Audience and go to, you know, the other display networks like Google and stuff, or whether you just stick to Facebook, I think is probably immaterial. But I think you should get that set up pretty quick. That would be probably towards the top of my list. Do you already have the Pixel installed?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I've had that in Pixel installed for a while. In reality, there is like, it's just a matter of, I put it under ongoing because there's a one-time piece of setting it up, and then there's the follow-on activities where you go in and you analyze, you know, how much traffic you've brought in, and do you have like a critical mass yet, and then, you know, what kind of advertisements you're doing. So there's like kind of two different components to that. But I do find that, like, even with my two-step process for the sign-up, you put in your email address and a password, then it takes you over to a credit credit card page, and there's people who don't fill that out. So obviously, like, those people I want to follow up with anyway, but I also want to make sure that people who come to the site and then go over there but never even fill out that first page, I still want to be able to retarget those people to bring them back, because obviously they were interested enough to go look at the sign up page, but they didn't actually sign up.
Yeah, I think in the interest of time here, because we're running pretty long today, I think you should consider, paid acquisition I have written here, and it's a tough one. It all depends on if you have budget and if you have time, right, to sit there and test a bunch of stuff. So something to consider. Maybe that goes on your later list, but it's definitely, if you can get it to work, it's really, really good. Cold email outreach. I mean, you have the tool to do it. Nice to use your own tool. You can go to something like LeadFuse and get a list of people and start doing the outreach yourself, or you can hire someone to do the outreach for you. That definitely, you know, we had mixed results with it at Drip, but it definitely drove enough trials that it made it worth spending. We were spending money on it, not time, and it definitely had positive ROI for us. Integration marketing, which is, you just think of all the, like, the top 10 integrations that you would want to have, and think about trying to get either in their directory. So if it's like Stripe or Basecamp, they're probably not going to co-promote with you because they're so big, but they have these integration directories. Or if they're a little bit smaller, you know, if they are a startup, they probably have a list and are willing to email out and promote you. Now, that requires dev time, of course, so it has to be worth your while. But that was something, we did 30-something integrations with Drip, and it makes a lot of sense with a tool like Drip, right? Because it is a hub of data. And so we integrated with a bunch of shopping carts and all types of marketing tools, and that both helped our customers, but it also really helped us start to get traction and kind of be everywhere in the early days. So I think those are the other three I would throw out that you may want to do sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I've already been asked by people about integrating directly into Bluetick using the API, and I've kind of pushed off mainly because I know that there's parts of the API that are still changing, so I haven't really structured it in a way that says, hey, this is available for you to use, and it's pretty solid versus these other pieces where, you know, you shouldn't touch it. And I had a conversation with somebody at FemtoConf where they said that they actually have three different versions of their API published. One of them is for them internally, and then there's another one that's kind of a public API, and then they have like a special endpoint specifically for Zapier. So it was interesting to hear that, like, they split theirs out. And, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense as well. So it's just a matter of kind of rearranging some things a little bit to allow people to do that and say, hey, these areas are solid. These areas are kind of like off limits, or don't touch them.
Yep, that makes sense. Anything else you want to pull out of here? I mean, in the ongoing, it looks like you have a couple more, and then you have some stuff for later.
Yep. Well, I mean, the one idea that had come to mind that somebody had mentioned to me at FemtoConf was the idea of having Bluetick as offered as sort of a managed service. So for X $1,000 a month, then they'll send all of their contacts over into Bluetick, and then it's my responsibility to kind of make sure that things are running smoothly for them so that they don't have to go in and manage anything, which if you set up a lot of the automations and stuff, you don't really have to worry about that. But there's also like ongoing tweaking, or, you know, A/B testing, or making sure that, like, are these numbers in a reasonable ballpark of what they should be? So, like, if you're getting a low open rate, for example, how would you necessarily know unless you're looking at all the other data? And I have access to that, but other people don't. So those are things that I can provide a lot of additional value for customers, but they don't necessarily have access to it on their own if they just signed up.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, there's risk with managed services because it can just suck up a bunch of your time. And also the revenue is just not worth nearly what SaaS revenue is in terms of a multiple, whether you're going to raise funding or whether you're going to sell or whatever. If you have a bunch of consulting revenue, it's worth like 1x the revenue versus actual recurring revenue is a different story. And I shouldn't say recurring, it's higher margin revenue, right? Where it's, if it's software, it has 70 or 80% margin. And if it's consulting, it has what, 10, 20, 30% margin. So it's something that I would consider in the early days, but you really gotta, it just matters what cash position you're in. I think you would do it for the cash and not really for the long-term prospect of the company, because I don't think you want to grow a big kind of productized service long-term.
No, I agree. And the way I was going to structure it was like, hey, here's a managed service that if you want to subscribe to this, you can. And it's either like a 3-month or a 6-month contract, and then that's it. And if I decide to continue offering it, then they can continue paying me for it. But if I decide that, like, we're not going to do this anymore, then, you know, things are kind of pushed back. So it wouldn't be something that you could just kind of like go to the website and kind of buy off the shelf, but it'd be like limited 3 to 6 month contracts or something like that. And you're right, it would absolutely be for like improving cash flow, for example. But it would also put a solid number on, hey, what is this particular customer going to be worth to me in the next 3 months or in the next 6 months? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Could certainly trying it with one customer is not going to hurt much, right? And that's the thing, is to see how much, if it's valuable to them, if it's workable for you. And obviously, if you do it for 10 or 20 people, you're getting yourself in pretty deep, but you don't have to do that. You can just dip your toe in and figure it out, you know?
Yeah, I was going to do it for probably like 1 to 5. And the other nice thing that I thought that that would deliver to me is the ability to work hand in hand with those customers and see exactly what it was that they were trying to do, as opposed to like, hey, here, sign up to Bluetick. And then after that, I don't really have a ton of visibility into their business or exactly what challenges they're trying to solve. Like, I know generally what they're trying to do, but I don't get that insight, or I don't have like calls with them to really see like on a weekly basis, hey, what are you really trying to get at with this? And I think that those insights would actually help me build a better product longer term.
You know, the one other thing I see on your later list that I like, that I don't think we've covered, is you have this library of email templates, lead gen, and you would use it as lead gen to acquire email addresses. I think that's intriguing, right? For the SEO and for the, you could always run ads to it, you could retarget to it, and you're basically giving something away. So I think that's going to take a ton of time for you to set up. It's a lot more complicated than it sounds, but I'm glad you have it on your later list. So at least in a few months, once you get some of these other ones done, you can move into that and start thinking about how to shape that up.
Right. The other nice, I'll say, byproduct of doing that is that I could create those inside of Bluetick as a library where you can, when you create your account, you can just select from a bunch of them. Kind of similar to the way that Drip has those pre-made blueprints for different situations. This would be exactly that. Like, what situations have I run into with different customers that like they're trying to get a response or get the customer to take an action, and what sorts of things work, what sorts of things don't, what sorts of approaches do you want to try? And you could almost like categorize them as like, this is extremely aggressive versus this, to do the exact same thing to get somebody to a call. This one is much more laid back and hands off. And it depends on the situation, whether it's a cold email versus a warm email with somebody you've had 3 or 4 conversations with, is which one you would use.
Cool. Well, this was a good one. Thanks for bringing this on the show. I had fun talking about it, and I'm guessing it provided quite a bit of value for folks who are thinking about this kind of stuff. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.